Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now are two rockstar entrepreneurs. Who are you guys and what do you do?
My name is Anthony Mendelson. I go by Mendo. I'm founder and CEO of Mighty, and I'll pass it over to Pooh here to explain what we do.
I am Anthony number two, Anthony Pooh, go by Pooh. I am the founding partner and CRO of Mighty, and Mighty is the first device that lets you play your streaming music, like Spotify, on the go without a smartphone.
And we're actually going to bring in the cool little device that you guys have for this product in the coming segment that attaches. But I want to know, how'd you guys come up with this idea? How'd you get in this space? First of all, we know it's competitive.
Yeah.
You're going up against the big boys. Like, you guys immediately made the assimilation. Like, it's kind of like the iPod Shuffle or kind of like this.
Yeah.
So it's like, most people wouldn't have the audacity to try and compete against Apple and some of those big companies.
Yeah.
How'd you guys get in the space and come up with the idea?
Sure, I can take that. Because
he's the crazy one that started it, right?
Yeah, and I was somehow able to get him to come along on this journey. It really started from a personal pain point, I think, like a lot of products do. Pooh and myself were both ex-athletes. I was a big basketball player. He played tennis. And we also share a love of music. We met back in business school like almost 10 years ago now, which is crazy, and kind of connected over music. So we love music. We love sports. We started transitioning to streaming music. Spotify was our choice for streaming music back as early, as 2006. And since that time, we've noticed that hardware hasn't evolved basically to keep up with the music consumption pattern. So old products like the iPod Shuffle, you can even go further back like the Walkman. There's always been a standalone music product that works with the way people consume music today. And as the industry transitioned to streaming music, that stopped. So the iPod Shuffle, the entire iPod line only works with downloaded music. iTunes, 99-cent downloads, no streaming music functionality. And we thought that there was something missing that was leaving a gap in the market. And that was the creation of Mighty, was that product to solve that need.
Well, how'd you come up with the name? My favorite question is to find out how people come up with the names for their products, for their companies. Why Mighty? I should be asking you.
I know a little bit of the background, but no, he's the one that came up.
Yeah, I mean, he asked me that question too, right in the beginning. the idea was, we knew we wanted to make something small and durable. The idea was, your phone is kind of big and easy to break, and we wanted something that was small but mighty, and easy to bring with you anywhere. Wouldn't break if you dropped it, but in a small form factor.
Fantastic.
Small and mighty.
Well, I got to know how you two met. Like, at the end of the day, something happened that brought the two of you guys together. I'm sure you guys have looked back, like the butterfly effect, right? It's like, but if I didn't do this back in junior high, it wouldn't have led me to here, which led me to meeting you, and now we have this company. Like, I look back on all the things, and like, what was that first decision that I made that led me down this crazy path of 100 things that happened that put me literally to sitting right here today, right now? So how did the two of you guys meet?
Yeah, so we actually met in business school at UCLA. Like you said, it was almost 7 years ago that we met. Like you said, we bonded immediately over our love of music. We had some classes together, but also hung out a lot socially. We had a good time. And then after that, he actually moved back to the Bay, and I stayed in LA. But we definitely kept in touch. And then he moved back down here, and he actually reached out probably almost a year and a half ago, saying he was working on a hardware product, and if I had any one at Spotify that I knew, because I have a background in music, and didn't really think much of it, but then sort of followed up a few months later and was like, is this the idea you're thinking about? Because I've, thought about ideas like this in the past, and, for streaming music on the go and for running and working out. And he's like, that's exactly it. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. I think it's a great idea. We talked more and more. I helped us get in touch with Spotify. And then I just, fell in love with the idea from a personal standpoint and loved it as a business and got more and more involved. And then it became a real thing. And we launched our crowdfunding campaign, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the crowdfunding campaign, but I love how you guys came together and ultimately, met from school, and now you guys are working together.
Awesome. Yeah, it's nice.
Founder and founding partner of Mighty, Anthony 1 and Anthony 2 are in the house joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Tell us about the Kickstarter campaign, though. You guys said you did, what, $500,000? Right around there? What did you set the mark at? Because, it's like, did you set it for 50 and you did half a million?
Yeah.
Set it for 100,000? What did you guys do?
I'll let Pooh. Pooh was, he ran the Kickstarter, so I'll let Pooh talk.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into, I guess, trying to come up with the right goal. Because, like you said, you don't want to be so low that you hit your goal and then you don't have enough to actually make the product, especially with a consumer electronic. And then you don't want to set it too high, because if you don't hit it, then you don't get any of the money. Yeah. So we thought a lot about the literally bare minimum of what we would need to make this product a reality. And $250,000 was our goal.
Which is a big goal.
It's a big goal, and but you know, with having to manufacture a product, you need a ton of capital. So needed that.
So does this mean you guys didn't get any outside investments?
We have.
You have?
We
have
to get as well.
Yeah, we can talk to that.
But it actually cost a little more than $250,000.
Yes, slightly more.
That was our initial estimation.
Yeah. But we, you know, we came out with the bang. We probably raised almost half of it in the first 3 to 4 days. Got 75 press articles. We were trending on Facebook for a few days. It was pretty crazy. And then we hit our goal of 250. That was with about 10 days left. So we did a stretch goal, which is you know, an added feature or something extra to hit 300,000, which is a second color, which was what we put out there. And we actually hit that 300,000 on the last day of the Kickstarter. And then from there, we moved to Indiegogo's in-demand platform, which allows you to continue taking pre-orders. So we've been doing that since then and have hit over $500,000 now in pre-orders. So we're really excited about that. Yeah.
So what was the secret sauce to making that happen? Obviously, I feel like I should be focusing on Pooh over here since he's the one that did it.
Yeah.
What's the secret sauce? There's so many unheard of campaigns. The ridiculous ones that get put up, probably I'm making a number up, but like hundreds or thousands a day that are put on Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Oh, yeah.
I have an idea, and you guys are the reason for these people and giving them false hope over here. Like, oh, well, you can just put your idea up there and get $500,000. No. So break it down for us. What was all the stuff you had to do strategically and tactfully, and all the stuff that, you know, I'm not going to dig into, but I've heard lots of people say, like, you need to do this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
What were some of those real important, like, the bread and butter of what made it successful?
Yeah. I think different campaigns, there's, like, different strategies you can have. For us, it was all about preparation before the launch on day one. I think 90% of the work was done before the day one launch, and that was the goal was to sort of be everywhere, like whether people were on Facebook or reading their favorite blog or website, we wanted them to see Mighty somewhere or even in an ad somewhere. So
I think I've heard of your guys' stuff. Like, I think whenever you did the big launch, I was looking at the sheet this morning at the guests, and I was like, Mighty. I was like,
I've seen it somewhere on one of the sites scrolling around. And so there's a few things that went into that. We did a lot of friends and family outreach. And so there's a whole process of segmenting our email lists of our different networks and sending them certain emails to give them a heads up about the launch. Even sent them an email the night before so they could have early access to the campaign, which gave them some exclusives and also had some people, you know, funding the actual project before we officially launched. So when strangers came on, they saw that it was already partially funded and it wasn't like $0. Yeah. And then we did probably a handful of press that went out that morning, which drove a bunch of people to the site and revenue. And then I think from that, more press, you know, who follow Kickstarter campaigns saw the success in the first few days, got more press, more users, and it's sort of like a snowball effect at that point.
Fantastic. Yeah. So it's a lot of things.
Yeah, and I will say too, like we put on a lot of work from a product standpoint too. Yeah. Like we had actually,
you actually had a great product.
He was all about the hype machine, and he did
the
a great
PR.
Job. Yeah, the PR machine, and he is that. The thing I love about Kickstarter, we didn't have to have the final product yet, but we got it far enough along. We called it a proof of concept to show that we actually can build this thing, and I think that legitimize what we were doing, that this wasn't vaporware, as some people like to call it, and we could actually build this thing. And I think that helped people have faith in backing us from the beginning.
Yep.
So with the technology that we're in now, why choose to not make this just a little touchscreen?
The biggest idea around Mighty, it was kind of our mantra for product development. One was simplicity, and two was durability. Speaking to the durability piece, a touchscreen inherently is easier to break than not having a
touchscreen. I'd be more nervous. Like, exactly. I straight up feel like I could be like, yo, poo, and like throw it across the room.
Exactly.
And be like,
exactly.
I'm out, and go for your jog and be like, clip. Yeah. Like, so it feels like that.
Yeah. And that's the idea. Like, you can drop this from 10 feet. It's water resistant. So in any moment, if you're on the go, that's the whole idea behind Mighty.
Yeah.
No matter what activity you're doing, you don't need to be worried about breaking the device. It's also less expensive due to that. It's a $79.99 product, so under $100, and doing it without a touchscreen was one way to do that.
Fantastic, guys. Well, I'm excited to peel back the layers on the company a little bit and figure out where the future of Mighty's headed. Yeah. We'll be right back with the guys behind Mighty Anthony 1 and Anthony 2. It's easier to refer to you guys that
works.
Way. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com. Code 0707. Enjoy.
This is sponsored.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us again are two rockstar entrepreneurs. Tell us who you are and what do you do. Recap for us.
Anthony Mendelson, founder of Mighty.
Anthony Poo, founding partner and CRO of Mighty.
And Mighty is right here on the table with us. Break it down for us.
So Mighty is the first device that plays streaming music like Spotify on the go without a smartphone. So it's a small clip-on device. It's durable. It has a hard drive, and there's a mobile app component of it that allows you to sync any of your streaming music directly onto the device and play it back offline. So after you sync the music onto the Mighty, you no longer need your phone, leave your phone at home, and we have very intuitive controls to listen to your music afterwards. So song forward, back, volume, play, pause, and then we have this cool thing called a playlist selector button. So if you've synced all of your favorite playlists, maybe you have 10 of them, hit this button and we're going to speak the playlist name back to you each time so you know where you are on the device. Small clip-on and easy to use.
So something like this, people don't understand the work that actually goes into this. Mm. So talking about your guys' company here and just the reality of being an entrepreneur is things take longer than you always expect. Things cost more than you always expect. You guys originally thought, hey, this is going to cost us about $250,000 for Kickstarter for our first run. And you ended up doing $500,000 across your crowdsourcing. But at the end of the day, you had about $500,000. Then you guys went out and you raised more money. Tell me why. Tell me what kind of happened there where you guys were like, we need to go and raise more money now. Because clearly, right, like I just said, things take longer and things cost more.
Yep.
So break it down, because a lot of people at home, they don't understand like how much time and energy and money and pitfalls and mistakes go along with making something that seems so simple.
Yeah. Yep.
Come to life.
Yep. Yeah, I'll speak to the hardware and fundraising piece because they go together with our experience. So what we saw as we were taking these pre-orders and getting closer to getting to market and establishing what was needed to actually build this thing was that, one, it was going to be more expensive to build than we thought.
Yeah.
Two, it's more economical to build at scale and build a lot of these more than just Kickstarter backers. And three, that there was going to be significant demand for it once we produced it and brought it to market.
Yeah.
So rather than just make, 5,500 units that we had from our Kickstarter backers, we decided that we think there's bigger potential here and it would be more cost effective to make more units. With that process comes the need for more capital. So we are in the middle actually now of our seed financing round, which will be around a $2 million round. And that's to really produce mostly all of the funds are going to produce as many units of Mighty as we think we can sell.
Fantastic.
And Pooh is leading our sales efforts, so he knows a lot about that.
Well, let's get into that then. Maybe we should, before we get into the sales part, because I think that's really important, because a lot of people don't understand. Companies that are usually successful on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they don't end up becoming businesses. They just make a big launch for a product. They have very little business experience.
Yeah.
They get a bunch of money. They fulfill the orders. And then they usually go, now what?
Yeah.
How do we actually, we did a launch,
yeah,
but a launch isn't a business.
Yeah.
So I am curious to pick your guys' brain on that. Anthony 1 and 2 from Mighty are joining us right now. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm loving the product, but again, before we shift gears to the sales, I want to know what it felt like to get the $500,000 and now be having people entrust you with $2 million. Was that something that, like, how did it feel? And was that something that you ever thought possible?
I mean, I can speak to the first part of the crowdfunding. For sure. That was extremely like cool to just that whole experience. Like it was 30 days. It was, I mean, we were up for 20 hours a day, but was an awesome experience. Like definitely a roller coaster of emotions. Like we'd see the funding go up and then slow down and then go up. Like I said, we raised almost 50% in the first few days.
I can imagine on like day three when you guys see $250,000 come in or whatever it was. Like, what? I'd be sitting there, refresh.
That's what we were doing. We had a setup on our phones where each one would hear like a notification. Someone just bought one. Someone just bought one. But it was, you know, Kickstarter is awesome in that way. You can put an idea out there and we, you know, it was built from a personal need from ourselves. And to put it out there and see that tons of other people wanted it and there was demand for it was just like very gratifying and just very motivating to continue to push and really make it a business.
What about the $2 million part though? Yeah. Because that's kind of like two different beasts, right?
Yeah.
There's chasing rabbits and hunting elephants. You guys did a good job of catching a lot of rabbits with the Indiegogo campaign. You got, I don't even know what, tens of thousands or just thousands of people to give you their money?
Yes.
Yeah.
So proof of concept. Boom.
Yeah.
And you know that's the reason why you're getting your $2 million from the elephant.
Yeah.
Whoever this entity or company or individual or people are, they're entrusting you with $2 million. Yeah. What does that feel like? Because again, it's two different separate accomplishments.
Totally different. Yeah. For I've been doing the majority of the fundraising efforts, and it's for me knowing where you should use the money and where you shouldn't and being prudent with how you use the money. Like my background is at Google, and at Google we didn't really talk that much about money. It was just kind of a given.
That's
that you would
Google
have money.
Just print money.
Right? No, I mean now I appreciate that so much more.
Like zero expenses and 100% profit.
Exactly.
We'll
so
it's
a great business and I love Google. But it's been a shift in my mindset as a founder and someone who's taking money in from in a lot of cases people I know or have at least sold this vision to. And knowing when do you spend the money effectively versus not. Like, Pooh and I haven't paid ourselves yet to date, not a dollar.
Which most people are like, what?
Yeah.
You got $500,000, you got $2 million. It's like, yo, I ain't touched any of that. And that's what, for some people, it's like, oh. They hear all that and they think it must be so glamorous, but it's like, no, I'm waiting for this payday.
It's a hustle.
The payday's going to come later, hopefully.
Yeah. And you know, but that comes down to every single decision we make. Should we spend $2,000 on this photo shoot? Should we spend $5,000 at CES or $500 at CES? And just, it's a big burden to think about how you most effectively use the cash because we won't have it forever, you know, and you need to make smart decisions around it.
Yeah. So are you guys in a position where you're the ones making the allocation of the funds, it sounds like?
Yeah.
Because sometimes the strategic partners come in and they want to decide, but you guys are in that position. So shifting gears back to the sales and marketing side of things, how do you initially plan to get this out there? And then obviously you have to fulfill the orders, but it sounds like the Kickstarter is going to already fund itself. But then the $2 million, how do you initially decide how to allocate those funds? Yeah. But more importantly, as I'm sure your investors care about as well, later... Maybe after 18 months, how do you consistently scale and sustain the sales?
Yep, that's a great question and something we think a lot about. I think initially, for the first probably, you know, the rest of this quarter and probably Q1, we're going to be very, very focused on direct-to-consumer sales on our own website. And pushing people there. That's where you get the most margin, you know.
Are you doing Facebook ads, Instagram, things like that?
Facebook ads. We're going to do a lot of influencer marketing. We have plans for that. And, you know, another round of press. Press was very, very effective in driving sales for us, whether it's sort of free press on the side or publications that have affiliate relationships with, like, Amazon, which we'll be on as well when we launch.
Nothing better than having somebody else, especially a credible publication, toot your own horn for you, right?
Sure.
Where can people find out more information about you as well as Mighty?
So we're pre-orders on our website, which is bemighty.com.
Okay.
Empu, do you want anything else to plug?
Social media or anything?
Yeah.
Like that? Yeah.
At Mighty Unplugged on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook as well. Facebook.com/Mighty Unplugged.
Awesome. Guys, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
Thanks so much.
Best of luck, guys.
Thanks.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Creeble.
I remember watching my grandmother spend hours doing housework, like washing dishes, doing laundry, and hanging it out to dry. They called it Laundry Day because that's how long it took. Labor-saving appliances were among the great advancements of the last century, especially washing machines and dishwashers. They freed generations of women from the drudgery of such chores. By 1983, dishwashers could finish in 30 minutes, and laundry took less than an hour. Then, the government began regulating water and energy use. Congress adopted federal standards, and today's appliances take three times longer. Now, many people wash and dry things twice, so they're not saving water or energy. The government ought to tend to its own dirty laundry and leave mine alone. It's just not that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at Lent.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Glad to have you with us. Nick Desai is our rock star today, the co-founder at Heal. That's a good name, Heal.
Thank you.
What are you healing?
We heal people, and we heal the broken healthcare system by sending great doctors to your house on demand or on your schedule.
It's kind of like Uber doctors.
It's Uber for doctors, except our doctors are full-time, right, and they're available 365 days a year, and we take your insurance.
All right. My insurance?
Any insurance.
We'll get into that in a minute. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
Ever since I was a little kid.
Really?
Since I was five.
A lot of people say that. How do you know?
You know, well, my father was an entrepreneur. Yeah. His father was an entrepreneur. When I was 5 years old, I used to watch the TV show Dukes of Hazzard. Right. And there was a guy, Boss Hogg, right? Yeah. Big, heavy guy, would eat the peanuts in the white suit.
Yeah, I remember Boss Hogg.
And
I mostly remember Daisy.
I remember Daisy too. Yeah. But I asked my dad one day, I said, Dad, and my dad never watched the show. I said, Dad, what is a boss? What does a boss do? He's like, son, the boss is the person who works the hardest but gets to make his own rules. And I said, that sounds like something.
It makes the most money.
Well, he didn't say that part then, but he, and that's it. Ever since then, I was like, that's like something I want to do.
So how did you manifest that? What was your first job?
You know, so I went to undergrad and graduate school, both in electrical engineering. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerdy scientist, and I wanted to know how the world worked.
Right. Did you find out?
I found out how the subatomic world works, okay, right? The real world, I'm still learning. But the only real job I ever had working for anyone else was when I was in grad school. I was at Rockwell Science Center, mm-hmm, which used to be out here in Thousand Oaks, working on commercial GPS chips in something called aluminum gallium arsenide. I'm on gallium arsenide semiconductor physics, which was what my master's thesis was on.
Yeah, because you have a background in that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Then shortly after grad school, I quit that job. Took a year off and started my first company. So I've literally never actually interviewed for a job or made a resume.
First company was FitOrbit, right?
No, the first company, FitOrbit was my third, Heal's fourth. First company was a company called Zkey.
What'd they do?
That was we started in 1997, that was a web's first self-updating address book. Mm-hmm. So it was a precursor to a lot of what you see on Facebook and LinkedIn and software like that today, where if I update my contact information, it automatically updates for you, right? So that was a venture-funded company that was eventually sold to Sprint in 2002, and that was the first. After that, in 2004, I founded a company called Juice Wireless that was funded by Qualcomm and a number of other investors that made software before there was iPhones to take pictures and videos from your old flip phones with the cameras and publish them to the internet.
Right.
Then in 2008,
how did you figure that out?
How do
the
we
picture thing? I mean, did you?
You know, it's
is it a vision or?
It was a very interesting thing. Zkey was an idea I had in the middle of the night. Mm. Seriously, it's a very funny story. I was up at 3 o'clock one morning, and I'm not a night owl, but I had an upset stomach, and I was up, and I was thinking about trying to get back in touch with an old girlfriend at the time, and I couldn't find her phone number.
3 in the morning.
And I said, well, there's got to be a better way. And so I had this idea of a self-updating address book that would help people keep contact of each other's information. Juice Wireless, that we sort of triangulated on that solution. I was tinkering around with various things on apps, on mobile phones, again, before the iPhone.
Right.
And this problem was...
Flip phone?
And the flip phones were the little ones with the cameras. Okay. This problem was presented to me by someone and said, you know, back then MySpace was very popular. This is pre-Facebook, pre-all that stuff. And someone said, wouldn't it be great if I could take a picture or video off my phone and publish it directly to MySpace? So I went home and thought about it and said, yeah, let's figure that out, right? So I worked with a great technologist I know, and we figured out the solution, and that was that.
Did you make any money on that?
That one actually did not make money. That one...
It's a good idea, though.
Yes, it was a great idea, but the iPhone came out in 2007. The market melted down in 2008. And the combination of those two things, that company had to wind down and shut down.
So now you had your family background in entrepreneurial.
Yes.
Who's your mentor?
Wow. You know, that is an interesting question. I think I have two categories of mentors. I think there are mentors that I know personally.
Right.
And that includes some of my investors in Heal, previous investors I've had. One that's I've known for now for 18 years is the executive chairman of Qualcomm, Dr. Paul Jacobs, who's been very instrumental in giving me advice on what choices to make and
do
not
you use him?
Yes, I do, very actively. I learned a lot about entrepreneurship and business from my father, right? The most important lesson being never be afraid to ask a question because the worst someone can do is say no, right? Yeah. You know, people are always like, well, what if they say no? I'm like, so what?
So what?
They're not going to spit on you. They're not going to kill you. Say no, right? So they didn't give you money. It's not the end of the world. Someone else will. And then there are people who I read a lot about who I don't know, like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, who I find, you know, their blogs and their books and the studies about them and the way they approach their business philosophically, very, very inspiring. Mm-hmm.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Nick Desai is our rock star today. Like being a rock star? You're thrilled,
better,
right?
Yes, it's better than not.
What were the hurdles when you started Heal?
Well, the hurdle to starting Heal was being that it was my fourth company and that it wasn't difficult to raise money, right? Thankfully, it was a great idea. Everyone wants this to work and no one likes going to the doctor's office. So it wasn't difficult to raise money, which is often a hurdle when you first start.
But don't you have to deal with all the medical community and licenses?
The hurdle with Heal is both understanding the extremely complex and Byzantine regulatory environment for healthcare, the federal level, at the state level, at the local levels, right? But also going up against a system that is both massive and massively broken, right? Healthcare is a $3 trillion system that is so ensconced in the way it does things, it's hard for people to think outside of the box, right? Now, sitting here 2 short years later, we look back and say, we have a waiting list of doctors who want to come and work for Heal, right? But 2 years ago, when we first started talking to doctors, it was like, well, why would I leave a comfortable practice at this big, large HMO that I'm working at to come and work for Heal.
By the way, we'll get to this, but the doctors will come to your home.
Yes, right, yes, to house calls. So why? How can house calls ever work? How can you make the business profitable? How will you be HIPAA compliant? So going up against a regulatory environment, right, was one of the big challenges, going up against the inertia, right? Because healthcare is an interesting industry in that it's broken, yet, and everyone inside it says, well, it's broken. But very few people want to have the courage to step outside of that and say, well, I'm going to be part of fixing it, right? Mm-hmm. It's broken, but this is almost just, this is the way it is.
And that's a big step, right? Going outside the box.
Well, yes. And I think that if you look at any industry, Uber came along, it was not a evolution from a large taxi company, right? No. Amazon came along, it was not an evolution from a large retailer, right? In every space that Apple came along, it wasn't an evolution from a company that made TVs, right?
It's all new.
In every space, the disruptors are people who stepped outside and said, I'm going to completely rethink everything. Right? I'm not going to invent little, I'm going to invent big. It's actually a motto we have on the walls of the office at Heal, which is rethink everything, invent everything, right? Because I don't think that you can change an industry as big as healthcare by making little changes within the system. I think you have to step outside and completely look at everything and not accept anything as, well, this is the way it is. Mm-hmm. Why is it this way? And only by questioning that is there an opportunity to really, questioning at that level, is there an opportunity to really change
the industry. Raising money was easy, right?
Raising money was, for Heal, was amongst the easiest fundraising experience ever.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because I don't care if you are the poorest person in America or the richest person in America, if you're a medical doctor or if you never went to grade school, everybody has to go to the doctor and everybody hates going to the doctor. This is an idea. I've had ideas that I've had to...
out-of-date magazines people hate more than
yeah. That's part of it, and the dirty waiting rooms and right. Not knowing if the kid next to you has vaccinated or not, and your kid is getting exposed. But fundamentally, I've had businesses where I had to explain to them the value, that it was hard to understand, it was more complex. This is something where I say, a doctor will come to your house and take your insurance, and literally every single person says, I want that to work. I want this to work. Mm-hmm. People are rooting for this business. Now, that's a double-edged sword. It was easy to raise money, and thankfully we've been blessed. We've now raised $55 million in two rounds of fundraising. But it also creates a tremendous amount of expectation to execute flawlessly and grow quickly.
Mm-hmm. How prepared are the doctors when they arrive at the house? I mean, somebody says, my arm hurts, and you go and it's broken in half.
Right.
It's an exaggeration. But.
Well, so what we do ahead of time is you put in your symptoms into the app, mm-hmm. and if you put in symptoms that set off any kind of triggers, we tell you to go to 911. Mm-hmm. Chest pain, gunshot wound, broken arm. But a lot of times people don't know. They'll put in gas, and they think they have gas, or they think they have diarrhea, but it turns out they actually are having a heart attack, right? Mm-hmm. So when the doctors go there, they're prepared to immediately diagnose and triage, and in about less than 1%, about 12, 15 cases over the last 15,000 patients we've seen, we've actually had to call 911 and we've sent the patients. In half a dozen cases, we've saved people's lives who would not have called a doctor or gone to the emergency room. And had they gone to sleep, they would have not woken up at the next morning.
What's been the reaction of the insurance companies?
Well, the insurance companies have been thrilled because we're helping them save money and improve quality of care. And that's an important point because the only way to lower healthcare costs long-term is to improve health outcomes long-term. And the only way to improve health outcomes long-term is to return family medicine to the family room. So that doctor is a partner in your family's health. You're not waiting till you're really sick because it's so annoying to go to the doctor's office. You just avoid going. Mm-hmm.
And how many people are actually healed?
How many people are actually healed, meaning?
Does it work?
Well, yeah. So we're not actually allowed to say the word healed, right? But we have 15,000 satisfied customers, right? And a net promoter score in healthcare, it's a measure of patient satisfaction. Ours is plus 72. The next highest number we know of a large scale provider in California is plus 17.
Wow.
And most are in actually below zero.
So what's the website?
Heal, HEAL.com. Or you can go find Heal on the iPhone or Android App Store.
Nick, Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so
much. Good job.
An honor to speak with you.
Nick Desai, co-founder of HEAL. I'm Pat O'Brien. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. We'll see you next time.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707. Enjoy!
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Hey, have you ever...
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My two guests today at the CEO Roundtable are, who are you and what do you do? I want to hear the elevator pitch.
Sure. My name is Felina Hansen. I'm the founder of Hera Hub, a shared workspace and business accelerator for female entrepreneurs.
My name is Tony Del Mercado. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Hawk Media. We're a digital marketing agency, predominantly CMO and outsourced digital marketing team.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both here, and I'm really excited to just kind of share some of our best practices and some of the do's and don'ts of being a CEO and the ups and the downs. So let's start with failures. I think it's fun to talk about successes and achievements, but what we can all relate to as people, regardless of being an entrepreneur, is failing and making mistakes. So I'm really curious to hear from the two of you, what has been, and I have a big list myself, so I'm sure it's not easy to pick from, but what has been a mistake or a failure that you'd like to share right now, but one that more importantly had a big lesson?
I think for me, it was really the expansion of my business and choosing a path. I initially started down the franchise path and realized it wasn't a fit for the market and what we were doing. So we pivoted recently to a licensing model, and that has really worked for our business much better. But it was a painful mistake, a very expensive one, and a two-year process. So okay. Learned a lot.
What about for you?
I would say the biggest error that we made was in hiring people that were incredibly skilled, and we fell in love with their expertise as opposed to their culture fit or the way that they aligned with sort of our business objectives. It only happened a handful of times before, thankfully, we learned our lesson. But we hired some people that were incredibly gifted, incredibly skilled, but just didn't mesh with our mantra and sort of our core values. And that was a lesson hard learned, but I think we've corrected well from it.
I think that's the perfect thing of what you just said was hiring people that are incredibly talented, but they're not the right fit for the company culture. And so we all know, having our own businesses now, or hopefully we know, that company culture is what's going to allow our business and our people to thrive. And without our business and our people thriving, we're probably gonna have to close the doors at some point. So company culture is something that not a lot of business owners talk about. You maybe hear it from people like Tony Hsieh, who has a best-selling book about it. But at the end of the day, company culture is what really separates a company that's gonna be around for a long time and a company that's maybe just short-term success. So what are some best practices that you guys have for creating a thriving, abundant company culture?
Yeah, I'll jump in.
You jump in. You're the one that spawned this.
Yeah, I won't curse on your show, but I will say we have a tripartite mission or a set of values at Hawk Media. First and foremost, get stuff done. Get stuff done. Learn quickly and be cool. Right, and be cool can mean a lot of things. You know, how are you when things are overdue? How do you interact with a teammate when maybe you're under the gun? How do you relate to a client that might be ultra demanding and those kinds of things? But as long as you can get things done, you can learn things quickly, and you can be calm under pressure and cool and communicative and empathetic in that relationship with whomever it is, those are biggies for us. That's at least our foundation.
And I love that because it's that easy. It's just going through, these are the three things that we stand for. It could be a huge list, it could not be, but you guys got it right there. It's simple things. You guys have probably this type of casual kind of laid back.
We do.
Right?
Guilty
as long as you're
charged,
as long as you're in alignment with those three values, you're getting stuff done, right? You're laid back, you're chill, you're having fun. And of course, right, you're coming from a place of integrity and you love what you do. What are some things that you guys do?
So ours is learning and leading. So we very much have a learning culture at HeraHub for our staff, for our team, for our members. It's all about learning and growing, but it's also about leading. So being that example, that role model, and that's what I try to do for my team, whether that's me getting on the floor and cleaning the carpets, because I don't ask anybody to do something that I wouldn't do myself.
What is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It's fun to talk about or read articles or look online and look at these people that have these Instagram followings as an entrepreneur with a million plus followers because of their lifestyle and all this stuff. But, you know, maybe it's even the people that sell their app for $1 billion after a year. But the reality of it is that 99.999% of entrepreneurs are not living that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That's not the reality of it. So, you know, it's not easy to be an entrepreneur. So I'm just curious from you guys' perspective, you know, what do you think is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It could be a list. It doesn't have to be one.
Sure,
thing.
Yeah. No, I mean,
first things that come to
mind.
There's
a lot of stuff, right? I mean, the first and foremost, the accountability, right? Just knowing that every single thing that walks out your door or everything that's attached to your name is attached to your company. And it's a very, I think, ineffective and weak leader that points down the line as opposed to taking accountability for those things. And that's not something people sign up for when it's one or two or even five or 10 people in a shop. But once you have 50 or 100 or 500 people on the payroll to really take accountability for everything that happens, I think that's a big ask. And it's really hard, right? And being willing to put in the hours and make some sacrifices to execute on those things is... It's not something that you see when you're just on your own kind of slogging along through the trenches. But once you have a staff, there's also a responsibility, not just an accountability for the output, but a responsibility to, in our case, there's 60 people that I owe a paycheck to a couple times a month. And I don't take that lightly. I mean, that's something that it weighs on me when I go home and when I move through my life. And if I'm not executing at a high level, I know that I'm jeopardizing not just my own livelihood, but also that of a bunch of other people. So yeah. I think just the stress, and it takes a certain kind of personality to be able to shoulder that. But that's probably the biggest one. It's just the accountability. The buck stops here, and being ultimately responsible is a big one.
And sometimes you don't have people holding you accountable because maybe it's just you. Maybe you don't have accountability partners, which everyone hopefully does. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think accountability is a huge one because whether you're starting your own business and you're responsible for everything or whether you are growing a business, you're still responsible for everything, but now you're also responsible for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the bigger your company gets, really, I don't want to make a metaphor of like the bigger the burden gets or the bigger the weight on your shoulders is, because that's a bad way to look at it. Especially if you delegate and you learn how to adjust. But yeah, the accountability is definitely one of the things that is not easy to be an entrepreneur. Not a lot of people want to raise their hand and be like, yes, please, more responsibility. Give me more work. Give me more responsibility.
And wearing so many hats, especially as you start off in your business. You may be the best attorney in the world, But until you have the budget to hire a marketing person, mm-hmm. guess who's doing the marketing? Guess who's doing the accounting? Guess who's setting up, you know, the email management system and things of that nature? And so I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize how much work really goes into building a business.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys. CEO Roundtable is complete.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.